From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Fairfax, California.
Glen Park.
Fillmore.
I'm from San Jose.
I'm from the Intermission.
UCCC World.
West Oakland.
East Oakland.
Coming up, we're going inside the controversial security housing unit at Pelican Bay State Prison. Nancy Mullane went where reporters had not for years, into the cells of some of California's most notorious inmates.
I received 2 terms for participating in gang activity, assaults, stabbings.
And she heard how they're hoping to redeem their lives.
Me and my pain, me and my guilt, me and my pride, I've been able to put that all aside and make it about what it really was about the whole time. It was my penalty for a crime I committed.
Stay tuned for an unprecedented experience behind prison walls. Over the past 5 years, KALW's Nancy Mullane has had unprecedented access to California's prisons and the inmates living inside of them.
You'll notice this is individual cells, 5 tiers. And I believe, what is it, almost 900?
There's 414 cells in there.
And then times two, because there's two men in each cell.
2 men in...
For the most part, yeah.
So 800 and some. I'm on the 3rd tier on the other side.
Do we get to go around?
Yes, okay.
Yeah. We just didn't want to go by the showers there.
KALW's Nancy Mullane is taking a tour of San Quentin Prison. While she was reporting on criminal justice issues, Nancy noticed that there were entire cell blocks and areas within the state's prisons where no press were allowed to go, including the security housing unit inside Pelican Bay State Prison. Last October, Nancy interviewed Scott Kernan, then Undersecretary of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. And full disclosure, Scott is my cousin. Nancy confronted him with this concern.
For a SHU facility, a lot of press have just given up because you know you can't get access to an inmate in a SHU facility for an interview.
Okay. That's a fair criticism. That's sad. But I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk to my communications guy and chat with him about what we've talked about and see what arrangements I can make and get back to you.
Over the next 5 months, Nancy followed up on Undersecretary Kernan's promise. In February, she was cleared to conduct an interview with an inmate inside his cell in the security housing unit.
You can get killed over disrespect or certain things like that.
But isn't it true that you can get killed by a debriefing?
Yes. CDC provides opportunity to keep us safe from active gang members. I always run that risk that an accident can happen. You know, I don't know.
After she left the SHU, Nancy pushed for access to other restricted areas of California's prisons, some never before visited by a reporter. That effort led to an interview with the secretary of the CDCR, Matthew Cate, the one person who could give her final approval for press access inside the most secure prison facilities in the state.
I'll consider it. I'm happy to have a further conversation about, you know, is there some way to get access, for example, to death row in San Quentin? You know, I do want people to see the conditions there, for example, because we've done a lot to improve the conditions at San Quentin. I go there myself on a pretty regular basis because it was pretty bad. And so I do want people to see that. We've given some access to the secured housing units in Pelican Bay.
But the question is, if you're saying 5-6 years ago the conditions at death row were pretty bad, but now they're cleaned up, so maybe we'll get death row access. Well, what about the places where we still don't have access? What if the conditions are pretty bad there now? I mean, you can tell me, you can say the conditions are cleaned up. But as a member of the press, that's our role, is to observe and report.
Soon after, the CDCR secretary notified Nancy that she would be the first reporter in more than 8 years to go inside San Quentin's death row, and the first reporter ever to visit the protective housing unit at Corcoran State Prison. All of this has come while the state legislature has been debating how much prison access to give the media. Over the weekend, Governor Jerry Brown vetoed Assembly Bill 1270, which would have given reporters the ability to request interviews with specific inmates. While the governor has said he does not want to glorify crime, advocates for the bill contend it would ensure punishment is justifiable. Today, KALW begins the first of a 6-part series following Nancy Mullane in her effort to increase media access to prisons. We join her as she travels 7 hours north of San Francisco to Crescent City and Pelican Bay State Prison. That's where more than 1,100 of the inmates considered to be the most dangerous and influential are locked up in the state's security housing unit, also known as the SHU. Here's Nancy.
Crescent City is the northernmost town on the California coast. Pelican Bay State Prison is a 20-minute drive north of that. The entrance to the prison is tucked back behind a small opening in the wall of redwoods that line the narrow two-lane road. Inside the clearing, it looks as if someone has taken a giant weed whacker to the towering trees. Left behind is a barren, bowl-shaped landscape filled with razor wire fencing and single-story cement block compounds.
Yeah, Chris Acosta.
Hey, so nice to meet you.
How are you doing, Nancy?
Good.
Chris Acosta, the prison's public information officer, introduces me to Warden Greg Lewis. He's got dark hair, broad shoulders, and cautious eyes. Warden Lewis invites me to take a seat at the end of a long conference table.
I never aspired to be a warden, I'll tell you that. But here I am. I've spent the last 20 years working in high-security prisons.
After months of negotiations, the press office of the CDCR, the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation in Sacramento, has given me permission to not only go inside the prison's security housing unit, but for the first time, to interview a SHU inmate inside his cell. Now sitting across the table from Warden Lewis, it's clear he was never informed I would have this sort of access. Acosta, the public information officer, steps in to try to clear things up.
He's cupped up. That's what we said, you know.
Right. That I'm fine with whatever restrictions, but...
At this point, I'm going to allow you to interview the inmate through his cell door.
But Terry Thornton said that this was approved. I told her that was the condition.
Well, that has not been shared with me.
Well, that was the condition of my interview. That's what I
okay.
established.
Can you turn that off, please? We're going to take a break.
I turn off my recorder. The warden tells Acosta to get Terry Thornton on the phone. Thornton is the press secretary based in Sacramento who approved the terms of my access. Still, it doesn't look good. While we wait for a resolution, Warden Lewis tells me about his prison. The security housing unit, the SHU, was built in 1989. He says it was constructed in one of the most remote areas of the state to isolate the state's most influential gang members. With a nod from the warden, I turn my recorder back on.
I think the SHU gives us the ability to stop the communication from this leadership to subordinates within our correctional institutions. I think it's been very effective.
Effective now, maybe. But Warden Lewis admits that prior to last year's hunger strike, things had deteriorated inside the SHU. Last summer, thousands of inmates throughout the state stopped eating to protest conditions in the SHU. That prompted Scott Kernan, the undersecretary of the CDCR, to fly to Pelican Bay to check up on the situation.
And actually, I sat out there with Scott when he met with the inmates. And it wasn't a negotiation. It was a commitment he made to him to review this.
Prior to the strike, Warden Lewis says inmates inside the SHU at Pelican Bay were not getting access to the same goods and services as SHU inmates inside other institutions, such as Corcoran and Tehachapi. Now, he says, that's been corrected.
We are committed to standardizing how our SHUs operate. Because there is some disparity between the SHUs and their allowable food items and their allowable property and television programming. So we're reviewing those. So we are moving forward.
But on the larger issues, such as the department's commitment to reviewing gang management strategies and creating new SHU policies, Lewis says it's going to take a whole lot more time before proposals are turned into policy.
It is a very long and extensive process, yes.
Acosta returns. I will be permitted to go inside the cell of a SHU inmate, but he will have to sit outside the open door of his cell, straddling a chair, his hands cuffed behind him, armed officers standing nearby. Agreed. Acosta leads me out the back door of the administration building and into an electrified high-security sally port.
Boy, it's just so... I guess there's... So if anybody tries to get out, you would see them clearly because it's just that's barren.
It's no man's land. That's why there's no shrubbery out here. That's why there's no trees
nothing.
Out here.
Mm-hmm.
No, because especially at night, all the big lights, trees, shrubs, features throw long shadows. They're easy to lay down in and obscure yourself. They're hiding spots. A big open expanse like this of no man's land is what you want. So somebody walking across it, you're able to recognize very quickly.
This way?
Yes.
This is Cross Currents from KLW News. Nancy Mullane challenged the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation for press access to the state's most secure prisons. We've joined her for a look inside the security housing unit at Pelican Bay. At the end of the long walkway, Acosta pulls open a heavy door and walks down a narrow hallway, which opens up to an octagonal central compound. Moving deeper into the prison's security housing unit, Acosta and I flash our photo ID cards again and again as we pass through one sally port after another.
You see it clear?
Yeah.
We'll
give her a vest.
Okay.
Once we get in here, we'll give you a vest to wear once we go inside.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're on the security housing unit. You've been around alarms before?
Mm-hmm.
All right. If there is an alarm, we'll have you stand against the wall. We will stay with you. There'll be a lot of responding staff, a lot of keys running by. Just stay out of the way and we'll respond to it appropriately.
Stopping at one of the command posts, Acosta collects a dark green puncture-proof security vest.
We're in the security housing unit right now.
And I'm going to have to put a vest on.
Yeah. Yes, you are.
Okay, I'll take this off.
He helps me pull the stiff vest over my clothes.
You just put it over here. Yeah,
that was
fun.
Would you rather put it on underneath?
No. This is fine. This is the way?
Yeah. This is Seaside. This is 136.
I follow Acosta into a long corridor in one of the SHU units. Overhead is a walkway where officers can patrol the area. And as we move down the corridor, there are locked steel doors on either side. About midway, Acosta stops and stands completely still.
There's a lot of men housed down here in SHU, but just take 5 seconds and listen. What do you hear?
Few keys, their steps, a clang.
People think of prison as being a very chaotic, very crazy place. It tends to be pretty calm down here in the security housing unit. It's quiet, it's very controlled, the inmates are very quiet. People always think that it's some horrible, torturous environment. Nobody's chained to the walls down here, you can't hear screams echoing off the walls.
With that, he turns and walks through one of the doors that's been left open. We enter the central core of one SHU unit. Fanning out in a circle around the core are 6 SHU pods. Each has its own rusty red security door filled with small holes, and inside each pod is an open space and 8 cells. Each cell has its own perforated door to allow the inmates to get access to air and light and to talk with one another.
People talk about the isolation of shoes, but when they come out to yarn, they're released from their cell. They can walk to tier unescorted. They stop at their neighbor's cells and talk to their neighbors. They come out to shower. They stop at their neighbor's cells. Their neighbors stop at their cells. They talk with each other all day long within their individual housing pods.
While I peer through one steel door into one of the pods, an officer in a uniform approaches. It's Lieutenant Rick Graves. He says for the past 28 years, he's worked in the SHU and has come to respect what it takes for men inside the SHU to survive.
What he's got in his cell and what his routine is every day or each day of the week becomes his entire life. And if you mess with that routine in some way, it can really screw with some people, and they can't handle it.
One break in their daily routine is a visit from a reporter. For some inmates, this is the first time they've seen a member of the press in years. Standing just outside the pod, I move my microphone closer to the door and listen in. The dozen men locked up in their cells are talking about me, who I am, why I'm here, and what I want to know. Acosta waves his hand, motioning for the officer in the control booth above to unlock the pod steel door. As I step inside, the inmates stop talking. They are looking, listening. Now inside the pod, there's a large open area with 8 cells. 4 of the cells are on the floor where I'm standing. Another 4 are up on the second floor. Looking up, a huge skylight fills the whole area with bright natural light.
So they'll come out here for an hour and a half a day and get their exercise and then rotate for the next inmate for he have his time to exercise. And hour and a half, next person, next person, next person.
At the back of the pod is a door that leads to a recreation yard. The yard is really just a 30-foot square cement box with high gray walls. Above, half of the ceiling is covered in wire, but is open to the sky and rain. The other half of the ceiling is covered in clear plexiglass. Officer Rob Hansen is the floor cop for this shoe unit.
Most of the yard time they spend out here, they'll spend right here in the drain.
That's a telephone.
You can communicate through the piping system from unit to unit, and that's how word spreads between the units.
Or through the doors.
This one connects to the pod next door.
Lieutenant Graves, the other officer standing in the yard, interrupts. He says not all inmates in the SHU want to communicate surreptitiously through the drain. He says inmates who have left the gang lifestyle and have gone through the prison's debriefing process don't want the option of communicating with active gang members, so they allow the drain to fill with water and don't complain when it does.
This drain here, no one's complained about it being plugged up, but in an active unit, the inmates would never allow that to happen.
An active unit meaning they're not debriefing?
Correct.
Back in 2006, prison authorities decided to try a new tactic that would control the flow of communication in the SHU from gang leaders to their subordinates. Instead of housing gang leaders in pods throughout the SHU, they decided to move all the leaders, what one authority called all the alpha dogs, into one isolated section of the SHU, cutting off communication to their gang members.
It has been extremely effective in reducing criminal activity within the prisons. It had an immediate effect within the other prisons and on the streets. It's harder for a leader to talk to a leader and get his message out to a soldier to go out and follow through with his directive. So it's like taking the head off the snake. The body doesn't know which way to go.
Since the prison isolated the gang leaders, Graves says there's been a steady uptick in the number of inmates asking to debrief, that is, to leave their gang affiliation.
They write a biography of their entire gang life, everybody they knew, everybody that required them to do something, everything that they did do, where they were at, where they knew them, and it's a full biography of their gang activity.
Has anybody ever come to you and said, I want to debrief?
Yes. I've had many want to start that process, and I do encourage them when I interview them from time to time about other issues. I tend to bring this up, particularly if they're a very young inmate, for example. I talk to them a little bit about their history and their background, their family, and how old they were when they came to prison, and how long they've been in with the gang, and I try to encourage them to think early on in their life about what to expect later on in life and ask them to, I just plant seeds in their mind to get them to think about the consequences of where they're headed.
Even so, Graves says, not every inmate who decides to debrief sticks with it.
We have had inmates that say, hey, no, I don't want none of this.
And I want none of this. What do you mean by this?
The debriefing process. Because they lived a life of secrecy for so long and don't tell or else we'll kill you mentality. Yeah, they get in here and they think there's a bunch of rats in here. I'm not a rat. I don't want to be a rat. But you really can't get into this program without having first told on a bunch of people.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. We're joining Nancy Mullane as she goes inside the security housing unit at Pelican Bay State Prison.
Leaving the yard and stepping back inside the pod, Acosta leads me to the cell of Ruben Ruiz. He debriefed in 2011. Standing on the other side of his cell door,
I squint to make eye contact, choosing one hole to focus my eyes on his eyes. Ruiz is a young-looking man in his mid-30s, with a short buzz cut, chiseled face, and lean body. He's wearing clean white boxer shorts and a white T-shirt. He tells me why he's in prison.
I was a kid. I went to the liquor store to buy some beer. When I was in the liquor store, I thought, we could get away with it and run out, you know. And from that moment on, everything unraveled until to somebody ending up dying behind it.
Back in 1992, at the age of 17, Ruiz was convicted under the felony murder rule and sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. He hopes that by undergoing the debriefing process, eventually prison authorities will transfer him out of the SHU in Pelican Bay to Kern Valley State Prison. That way, he'll be a little closer to the family he now draws pictures of to fill the walls of his cell.
That's my grandmother. Mm. Up in the left-hand corner, it says love.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of cut off a little bit from the...
Does she come and visit?
No, I haven't been able to see her. She has visited one time. This was maybe 4 years ago, four mm-hmm. or 5 years ago.
Does anybody else visit you?
My parents visit me, my sisters visit me, and my nieces and nephew visit me once or twice a year.
Ruiz says since he was sent to the SHU, he's gotten a business certificate and taken 30 units of college classes. And now, because of a change in the law, he faces the possibility of parole. We leave Ruiz's cell. Acosta says we have to hurry if there's going to be enough time for me to interview another inmate in the SHU. He tells me this will be the first time a reporter has interviewed a SHU inmate in his cell. As we walk, Acosta explains the terms of the interview.
So what we're going to do is we'll get inside the cell, and they'll cuff him up, secure him. We'll put him on a chair, then we'll slide the chair up, then you can ask him whatever.
Okay, and I'll be inside and he'll be on the outside.
I'll be in there with you.
All right. And who is this person?
Luca.
First name?
Robert Luca has been in prison since 1990 on a murder conviction. At the time, he was 16 years old.
He's been here for a while.
While I look around Luca's 9-by-12-foot cell, he sits straddling a padded chair just outside his cell door. He watches me study his world. Wires from a set of handmade speakers lead to a prison-approved television. Pencil drawings of a leopard and a woman are taped to the walls. In front of the cement pad he has for a bed, Luca has built a small desk. The legs are made of rolled-up manila envelopes. Others have been taped together to create a thick writing surface. Luca says he joined a gang when he was just 13. After getting locked up, he says he fell right in with the prison gang culture.
I received SHU terms for participating in gang activity. Assaults, stabbings.
You were involved in that?
I was involved in, yes.
Then in 2011, when he was 37, Luca decided to debrief and leave the gang.
It took me some time because I was so indoctrinated in the ideology of gang culture and life. So there was a lot of thinking behind it, a lot of soul searching, a lot of big questions. What's the purpose of life?
He says for inmates like himself, the goal in the SHU is to keep a sound mind.
You wake up early, you discipline yourself, you study, you read, you draw, you write, you do everything possible that you have access to. And you take day by day. You can't really, it's like kind of, you gotta kind of have like tunnel vision. You can't think about the future too far ahead. You can't think about your past. That might drive you nuts.
If he were still active in the prison gang, Luca says he wouldn't be allowed to speak with me. Now that he's out of the gang and making decisions on his own as an independent, if incarcerated, adult, it's a little unnerving.
Since I debriefed, I'm learning to feel what hope feels like. And it's indescribable, but I'm very grateful to still be alive and still have this opportunity. Before I used to think I was repaying my victim by condemning myself, But all along, I can see now, I was just making it about me. Me and my pain, me and my guilt, me and my condemnation, me and my pride. I've been able to put that all aside and make it about what it really was about the whole time. It was my penalty for a crime I committed. And that's the way it should have been from the start.
Are you done paying?
No, I'm just barely getting started.
As I leave Luca and begin to make my way out of the shoe, I peer into one of the pods of cells where inmates are held who have not yet debriefed. Large sheets of thick plastic are screwed over the porous cell doors, making any conversation among inmates in this pod nearly impossible. Acosta says these inmates are not available for interviews. What their world in the shoe is like remains a mystery. For Cross Currents, I'm Nancy Mullane.
This summer, after Nancy recorded at Pelican Bay, Robert Luca was transferred out of the shoe to the protective custody unit of Kern Valley State Prison, where he's able to visit with his family. In the next installment in our series, we'll go with Nancy into the Adjustment Center of San Quentin's Death Row, where the criminals considered to be the most violent await execution. Nancy has been reporting on California's prison system for 5 years. She's written a book documenting her reporting on five men who have been paroled after serving life sentences. It's called Life After Murder. You can find more information on her work and the book at KALW.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.